The following is an audio version of the off-the-record videocast. Friends of Fantasy Benefits has partnered with Nickel Press TV to bring this weekly edition to our show. Every week, host Andy Singleton are joined by Tehil Bedek and Celine Parekh, the fantasy doctor, as well as some of the leading fantasy football minds in the industry. You can watch the full version on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or on the Nickel Press YouTube page. Hope you enjoy the show.
Hey, this is episode 5 of Off the Record here on Nickel Press TV. Today, we're joined by another great group of guests as we're going to have Matt Waldman and Jake Seeley, the All-In Kid, joining us today. So stick around. We're going to have fun. I have a very sleepy, beleaguered, worn down panel this week. I'm honored that they're here. And the reason that is because we've now crossed preseason game 3. We got one more week left. And then the real fun begins. The season kicks off. These guys are hardworking. They are putting in incredible amounts of time to give you great information, great insight. And now I have them. We're going to pick their brains. Hopefully, we're going to get them to disagree with each other on some points. We'll see what happens. But we're going to go over some of their sleepers, some of their busts, some of their loves, some of their hates, and then some of their most intriguing storylines this year. So, second-year quarterback Jameis Winston. I know why I love him. What can you tell me why you are so high on Jameis Winston?
The biggest thing is I already liked him as a rookie because I like the fact that he didn't seem to be affected. At least when he was through college, the big part I liked about him was the fact he wasn't affected by the game situation. Whether he was down, whether he was up, he had the same type of poise in the pocket, the same type of control of the game. Obviously, the concerns were the inaccuracies, which we saw last year. But at the same time, we're going to take somebody who threw for 4,000 yards and 22 touchdowns. It was an inaccurate rookie season. And as you saw, just by his connection with Mike Evans alone, targeted Evans 17 times in the red zone, came away with 2 touchdowns. Mike Evans had 3 total for the year. You only expect that to improve as they improve their chemistry together. And if you look at it, too, over the last 7 games, he was top 10 in quarterbacks at 18.7 fantasy points per game. So you add all that together. You got the rushing ability, which I don't think is quite Cam Newton level, obviously, but you're going to throw in 4 or 5, maybe 600 yards and throw in a handful of touchdowns. It's just the fact that for everything that was a question mark last year, for all the inconsistencies he had for last year, for all the flaws that he had as a rookie that he's working on to improve, which I've seen some progress in the offseason, he was still QB 13, and you're getting him at QB 18, 19 in drafts. And that's really what it is. It's not so much I'm saying, hey, Jameis Winston is going to be a top 5 quarterback, but if you're one of the people who are waiting and you're not taking somebody inside the top 10, two of the favorites I've been pairing together is actually somebody similar who's and going through his second year, Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston has on so many teams. And I think that it's going to lead to a little bit of frustration at times trying to pick which one to start. But for the upside, both give me. I'm a big fan of both this year.
I don't know. I classify him as much of a big rushing threat. Matthew, sir, are you a Winston fan?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree with you in terms of what Jake has laid out there, with the exception of the rushing. I mean, he was never really a runner. I wouldn't add 400 to 600 rushing yards. I think that's rather high. But I do agree with him on all his points about what he's done thus far as a rookie, how he plays through adversity, and how he continues to play well. He has what most quarterbacks should have in the NFL. And what that really is that you can completely screw the pooch early on, and play poorly, and then just come back and just have a short memory about what you did in that first half or in the third quarter or on the last drive and be able to come back and produce well. And he's going to have a healthy Vincent Jackson who may not set the world on fire anymore as a fantasy option, but should provide them a veteran presence who's going to be where he's supposed to be, which he didn't really have last year. He's got, obviously, a rebounding Mike Evans, I think, who is going to produce well. And you have a second-year Cameron Brate, who now has more confidence, who's trained. So you've got a threesome there. And then you add on Doug Martin and Charles Sims. So when you look at this, I mean, I think I'd be surprised if he's going 18, 19 in leagues that I'm seeing. I mean, I'm seeing him going really in the 9th, 10th round in terms of quarterbacks as maybe somewhere in the seventh to, well, maybe not a seventh, but more like the eighth to 12th range of quarterbacks off the board. And I think that's a good value for him at that stage.
Yeah, more importantly, one of the names we left out, he's got Adam Humphries. So, you know, Adam Humphries is about to set the world on fire. I'm exaggerating just slightly, of course. But you also mentioned threesomes. Tahal, we know, loves them and may have just come back from one. Still not sure. But somewhere between QB 18, where you said 9th, 10th round, he's there. He's available, I think, is the point that we can all agree on. Everybody on the panel seems to be in agreement. They would be more than comfortable with having him as your QB1. Are we saying that, or are we saying just on your roster?
I'd take him as my QB1. I probably wouldn't. I don't like to draft two quarterbacks generally, but he would be somebody, if he was my QB1, I would draft a second quarterback just to make sure, just because of the slight risk. I thought that basically what I'm referencing ADP to, just for Matt, I agree with Matt. I've been in a lot of drafts where he is going a lot earlier than that. I'm just referencing Fantasy Pros ADP, just basically when I talk ADP. But as Matt said, I've been in a lot of expert drafts where you're in the higher level of knowledge and people aren't waiting that long. He's definitely right there.
I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's really going to run for too much. There's a stat I'm blanking on. I read before, like a couple weeks ago, about he finished in the top 13 or whatever, but he only had like three games where he finished in the top 10 or so. It was a strange stat, and I think he'll be fine this year. I mean, it's not somebody I'm generally targeting per se, but I mean, I think he'll be fine. I'm not overly excited. Vincent Jackson's old, but I'm still a fan. Evans is going to go off, and then, you know, if ASJ can ever get stuff together, the Washington product, he's a legend around these parts. Mentally, he just doesn't have it together. The guy is an asshole at the gym, playing open gym. He refers to himself as Austin or ASJ, like he refers to himself in third person. Like, he's just like not like a mentally normal dude, and he's not getting it corrected down there. That bum ass dude you mentioned earlier, I'm not even going to speak his name, the guy playing ahead of him and sometimes a tight end.
Anybody by default from the state of Washington is a legend in Tahal Lord Beddick's mind. Did you have one more thing you wanted to add on Winston?
I'll say that he's got a high floor too, because there was not one game last year, even as a rookie, that he had less than 13 fantasy points, which that's really what I like about him. That kind of ties into what Matt was saying too, about what I was touching on briefly, but he put into better words about his mentality. He's basically he's got a baseball closer mentality. He doesn't let interceptions, he doesn't let the first half affect how he plays the entire game.
And he comes from a baseball background as well, almost wanting to give up his football potential. I'm going to move on to a wide receiver that was my 1A. If it wasn't for a guy named Amari Cooper, he would have been my top receiver last year. I'm speaking of Devontae Parker, who one of my trusted resources for college scouting has listed in 2016 as somebody he not only thinks is going to be a bust, but somebody he's completely trying to stay away from. So I ask you, sir, what gives? Why?
Because guy leans too much on his talent in terms of physical talent, and that's great in college ball. In college ball, you can be fast, you can leap high, and you can get consistent production just doing those things as long as you can catch the football. But in the pros, you have to do more than that in order to get open and to make plays, and he hasn't shown that. Last year against Miami, you can look at the fantasy points per game. You can look at, you know, how many receptions he had or what the yardage was down the stretch. But what that does not show is that he played from the slot. And when he played from the slot, it was because they were hiding the fact that he couldn't run routes properly as an outside receiver to get open. He couldn't do it at Louisville when he faced cornerbacks who played press coverage on him. You can watch tape against Miami. You can watch it against NC State. And you see that he struggles to get separation. When you do that, you're not getting good timing or depth on your routes when you break open. And a lot of these routes sometimes look like, oh, the quarterback overthrew him or it was inaccurate, when in fact, the matter is, the fault is with the receiver. And we often saw that with Cordero Patterson with the first couple of years when he was in Minnesota. And I'm very wary about the fact that Devontae Parker thus far hasn't shown the ability to separate thus far in Adam Gates' offense. He hasn't shown skill with improving his breaks thus far. Kenny Stills has outplayed him. He's obviously earned the trust of Ryan Tannehill on third downs. And then you have, you know, Jarvis Landry thrown into the mix. And Devontae Parker, you haven't heard a single peep about how he's improved in the areas that he needs to improve in. So at this point, while he may give you some big games because he might beat somebody deep from the slot on occasion, or somebody falls down when he's playing outside, I do not feel good about him right now this year until he demonstrates some improvement with the technical skills that make you a consistent wide receiver. And that the, you know, if he was being drafted in the 14th round or the 15th round, I'd certainly take a chance on him, see if he improves. To take him in the 5th, 6th, 7th round, I just can't do it.
It's like a knife through my chest right now from one of my heroes. I can't argue with your point on him for this season, but can I say in some loose fashion and quote you that we're putting him in the same in the Cordarrelle Patterson boat?
Worse than at year two, he and Cordarrelle Patterson are struggling. He's struggling with the same things in year two that Cordarrelle Patterson has struggled with. Will he overcome that? That's what we have to find out, and I'm hoping he will. But he has to show that he's overcoming it. And one of those warning signs was when they asked him, you know, what do you consider the strengths of your game? And, you know, this is something that when it happens in the moment, when you have an interview, you don't want to overanalyze it because it's just like, whatever, you know, he's just talking to the media. But when you look back and you see in his college tape and the lack of technical skill, and in the pros, the lack of technical skill, and the Miami Dolphins trying to hide that and get him on the field to give him some confidence and use him in a way where they could use his strengths, which were leaping high, running fast, and catching the ball, which are important things, but doesn't make you a complete receiver. And they already have a good slot receiver, even though he's not a big play threat on the level that Parker is. When the answer is, the strengths of my game are my God-given ability, I just lean on my God-given ability, that tells you, that may tell you in hindsight a little bit that he doesn't really understand what to work on, how to work on it, or doesn't really care at this point yet. And he's young. Sometimes it takes a light to come on. Kristen Michael is a good example of a guy who needed, you know, a kick in the backside to figure out that, oh my God, my career's about to end here if I don't start applying myself on those little things that would support this great physical talent that I have.
Yeah, this has turned out to be a terrible day for Louisville fans who play fantasy football. First, you got the Teddy news. Now you got the legend, Matt Waldman.
I could be wrong. I'm wrong about so many things. But that one could be – I'm wrong about tons of stuff. But that's certainly a that's a concern to have. But to pick him in the fifth round, it's just kind of high to do that.
I'm just teasing you, of course. But before you joined the call, Mr. Bedick was referring to Kristen Michael. It seemed like he was comparing him to Jim Brown in some ways. So what's your take on Devontae Parker, especially after hearing this news? Are you seeing Cordarrelle Patterson flashbacks in your head right now?
No, he doesn't remind me of him at all as far as his game anyway. I mean, he doesn't remind me of him in any way. Maybe similar just in the fact that they just are both going to be disappointments. Yeah, I could say that. Their game doesn't remind me of each other at all in any type of way. Parker was one of the few guys who kind of has the upside of a number one receiver that you can get in the mid rounds. So it's kind of a steal, but I'm not feeling it really either. I'm not feeling it at all. I liked how he finished last year. I didn't like the draft pick of Miami in the first place. He's always injury prone. And he just doesn't seem to get it. So I'm just not a huge fan. I mean, I'm not drafting him probably anywhere unless he falls late to me. Plus, like you mentioned, they have got Landry already. You know, I mean, I'm not a huge Tannehill fan. Although they are gonna chuck it. I mean, again, he's one of those guys in the closer to middle rounds that does have the higher upside. So I mean, you know, if you're the only guy in the world that is now drafting multiple running backs with your first few picks, maybe take a flyer on a guy like that. But yeah, I probably won't be.
Well, Jeff Lloyd and I are very disappointed in all this Parker noise. Most accurate, Mr. Most Accurate. What's your take with Parker? You a fan or yay or nay?
A little bit brighter outlook, but obviously you would get a different opinion from 2 months ago than you would today. 2 months ago, I was talking about the fact that I thought Devontae Parker could surpass Jarvis Landry this year, but where I'll agree with Waldman to a degree, but a little bit differently, is I almost kind of feel like he's regressed since he hit the NFL.
In just 1 year?
Honestly, yes, because when I watched him cut out of college, these are the things I liked when he came out of college. Obviously, you love the size and the quickness, but I thought he was very smooth in his movements, and he was doing – I thought he had good body control of setting up the defenders and attacking the ball. What Waldman said, he's 100% right. I think he's lost that somewhere along the line, and maybe I was reading too much into some of his tape that I watched at college. Maybe I only saw the good and never saw the bad, but – I just feel like he lost some of that, and he is right. He hasn't looked as good as I saw some of the tape coming out of college, and it's specifically in running the routes and separating himself from defenders. And as he mentioned, you look at the numbers last year towards the stretch, and in the performance that he outdid Landry in, he was only catching about 50% of the ball. So you can throw in everybody what wants to complain about Kelvin Benjamin and his inefficiency with catching the ball. Same thing for Parker. I still have hope. I still think he can be better. I think he lost some of it, like I said, and it is only 1 year, but I do think he lost some of it. He needs to take a step up, but as again, and I don't want to agree too much because as you said, it's not for the best show, but to what Matt said is when you turn back and your response isn't, these are the areas I need to work on, or this is some of the things I've been talking about with my coaches, and it's just, hey, it's my God-given ability and I'm amazing. Yeah, you kind of go back to like even like the Percy Harvins of the world. It kind of worries you a little bit, especially when you throw into what the T. Hall just said. He can't stay healthy. I mean, now he's talking about their injury with his hamstring again. I already had a concern with that to begin with.
It sounds like we're talking about Austin Seferian Jenkins now, relying on his God-given talent. And
that sounds like something I would say. You know,
it does sound like something you would say. You are exactly right. That's what I was thinking. Matt has said he's been wrong plenty of times. I highly disagree. One guy I would agree that I think he's going to be right on this year is also now in Miami. Kenny Stills was entering what was going to be a huge breakout third year in New Orleans with Drew Brees throwing on the ball, and then somehow wound up getting traded to Miami before the season started, kind of delayed his progression, if you will. Adam Gase has a history of producing a receiver that's going to break out. A lot of people are thinking that was Parker. It's becoming more and more apparent that Kenny Stills is primed to be that guy. So
that's what I meant to say when I was thinking. I was like, yeah, Parker. And I'm like, who's the other guy killing it? Yeah, Stills killing it, although his back locked up or something the other day. But, yeah, he's been killing it. So, yeah, Parker becomes the third option. Yeah. So go on. Sorry.
So I think you just have to be learn how to discern what numbers or what things are important with the preseason and what context that works out for you. And when you consider Kenny Stills, he's probably one of the most targeted third down options in Miami right now. He's being relied upon in what you would call those money down and distance situations, and he's making plays there. To give a little background, you talked about that his breakout was somewhat delayed when he went. He looked like poised to be with Drew Brees, and then he got traded to Miami. The reason behind the trade, from what was said a little bit behind the scenes, was that he wasn't much of a worker, and that he wasn't a consistent enough worker. And while they were happy with what he did on the field, they had some minor concerns about him long term being the type of guy that they wanted to have on their team in terms of just maturity level, approaching things as a professional. And he came down to Miami, and you know, it was it didn't quite work out. And some of what didn't work out in Miami too, talking to a quarterback coach that I know who has coached some of the Dolphins backups in the past as a consultant, working with mechanics and working with, just kind of the mechanics of quarterbacking. He works with a lot of college guys as well. He said that Miami's offensive system before Adam Gase was usually in an offensive system, you have different calls for routes that denote various depths for the type of route that you're going to run. So if you're going to run a speed out, maybe it has three or four different depths to it, and a certain notation will give you an idea of what depth that wide receiver needs to run that route. In that pre-Gase system in Miami, they didn't have that. So the problem was is that the wide receivers had one call and they could have anywhere up to three or four depths for a particular route. And it was so confounding that you're trying to think and read situations a little too much into all of that. And it can make communication really bad. Being a new receiver going in from, you know, the offensive mastermind of Sean Payton and going to that system had to be tough in its own right. It was also tough for the other receivers in there, and they were probably fed up being there as well. So, of course, Jarvis Landry is going to be the check down king as good as he is. It also just seems like the going to be the one guy who's probably going to have some of the easiest route depths to look at from the slot. Because there's only so many limits of what you're going to really do from that position in terms of a route depth. So when I look at that, it's also more intuitive with what you're reading with zone type of coverage. So looking at stills, he had that kind of thing going on. And then I think also he realized that last year was kind of a wake-up call for him. He came into camp. He heard that steady drumbeat of him coming to camp, being in shape, better shape than he was the year before. He's played well consistently. They feel good about him. And when he does play well, you got someone who can go deep. He certainly can run after the catch pretty well. He's a physical, tough player. He's not a really big player, but he's still someone that can give you that kind of good play all over the field, over the middle, win the ball in the air. And it just makes him a reliable guy. And I think for Miami, they're going to have – they have this offensive line that's filled with former tackles, which is great for pass protection, but not really great for running when you don't have any true guards. So when I look at this particular offense, I feel like that you're going to see – this team throwing a decent amount, and Stills to me looks like probably the second most productive receiver in that unit. And I think that in hindsight, we may look back and say Stills probably earned Parker's ADP and Parker probably earned Stills ADP.
One of the things I loved about Stills and why I thought he was poised for that breakout was because he was kind of getting labeled as the deep threat, kind of taking over the Lance Moore role with the Saints. But if you look back at his days at Oklahoma, he was much more of a complete receiver than just a speed guy. He had great speed, but he was much more physical than just being a burner. So now you're starting to get to see that develop. And Ryan Tannehill is not nearly as bad of a quarterback as everybody wants to label him. Maybe, if you're looking at wins and losses in the real world, but as far as fantasy and putting up production and finding receivers, he's really not that bad.
And I like Stills coming out of Oklahoma. And what was interesting about him is that he just had some minor technical points that he needed to learn and work on, some similar technical points that even the guy like Will Fuller has issues with, but maybe to a larger degree. But Fuller is obviously a more explosive player. I think Stills is a good enough player to get deep. If you run play action passes, he's going to get deep with you on the post. He's also a little bit better maybe posting up and making a play over a defender in that regard. But he's not as explosive as Fuller. But at the same token, when you take a look at, Miami's offense, you got to remember, all those things affected Ryan Tannehill's play, what I described about those route depths and the confusion with that system and not being, the complaints that were discussed about that are pretty unusual that you would have such bad communication or structure in terms of an offense like that to make it that, like, well, your guess is as good as mine how far I'm supposed to run on this particular play. I mean, and what I was also told was that Ryan Tannehill is like a computer when it comes to remembering information. From a positive standpoint, they said that the receivers and the quarterbacks were pretty much – they had a lot of admiration for his intelligence and his recall, which we may find if this turns out to be a big issue, we may look at in hindsight and go, wow, that maybe Ryan Tannehill was holding this thing together a little bit more than we realized.
Yeah. Mr. Thomas Rawls, who we've all just anointed, basically signed him up for Marshawn Lynch's production because he's going to be the guy in that role. I personally thought Rawls was the MVP of last season because for him to step in and be as productive as he was and keep the ship afloat for the Seahawks, I thought that was MVP, quality, if you will. Now everybody's just assuming that he's just going to come in and be the man. As we mentioned, you got You got Procise that they drafted highly. You got Kristen Michael on the rebound, maybe finally got his act together. We haven't really seen much of Rawls to begin with.
The problem with Rawls, look, and the thing is, I don't really hate any specific play. Like, you can make the argument, and it's cliche, but any player will have value at some point in fantasy. You can find value for anybody outside of maybe Tavon Austin. I do hate him. I do not get the understanding with the Tavon Austin love, but that's another point. The problem I have with Thomas Rawls is that he's still RB13 off the board. That's what's insane to me. I look at the value. I look at the cost and the return value they could potentially get. And the thing is with Thomas Rawls, he's not going to play till week one. He should be ready by week one. And I don't dislike Thomas Rawls. I don't dislike his talent. I don't dislike what he can do. But the Seahawks do not need him to carry the ball 20 times per game in that first week with the fact that Kristen Michael has finally come alive. We can finally all get back on the bandwagon and say, hey, Kristen Michael's a real thing now. I am a fan of CJ Procise. I think that he'll carve out a role as long as he's healthy in the Giovanni Bernard type sense where he's going to demand a couple touches a game just because of his explosiveness in the passing game. It just really comes down to they don't need to. Maybe week 5 or 6, once Thomas Rawls is back into the flow of things, they start giving them 20 carries. And I'm saying 20 carries, not versus 20 touches. It's just I don't see any reason why they're going to start the season and say, hey, we have Thomas Rawls coming over with a severe injury. He didn't play at all in the preseason. But you know what? We're going to give him 20 carries week one. They'll just go right back to it, especially with the options behind him. That's what it comes down to. Don't ask me to pay near RB1 price for somebody who's not going to get the touches.
This is incredible. I couldn't say it any better myself if I practiced for 3 hours or stayed up all night. I'm really not feeling wrong. I wasn't his hugest fan to begin with, but yeah, now Michael looks great. Procise, they're going to want to use him as a third down back probably immediately. He's coming off the major injury. It took much longer. It was much more serious than I initially thought. It's taken forever for him to come back. I think they're going to be a much better passing offense as we saw at the end of last year. Prolific, record-breaking even. They were just killing it. Now we got Paul Richardson back. Jimmy Graham is going to be back shortly. Add those two to what we were doing passing-wise at the end of last season. If they really want to open it up, we could be talking some New England, some New Orleans style. Just slang it. If they really want to get down like that, I'd like to see that. I'd like to go away from the ground and pound a little bit this year, and I'm hoping they do so. And if they do so, that's going to cost Rawls, and we don't know how he's going to come back from the injury. We also don't know. If what he did last year, I don't know how for real it was. I mean, we saw it. It looked pretty good. You're calling him the MVP of the season. I guess we should maybe talk about that more, but there's no reason to because it doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, that'd be cool. And then I'm just not comfortable drafting him. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't like drafting guys off the injury. I don't like guys who haven't. He's hardly practiced. I'm not feeling it. At all. I guess it would just depend on what other running backs are there at that point in time. Running back 13, who's around that point? I need some reference here.
The following roles is CJ Anderson, Carlos Hyde, Latavius Murray, Matt Forte, DeMarco Murray, and on from
I got all those guys ahead of him on Fantasy Pros, am I right? Can I just copy your rankings and change like two things so I can finish in the top five?
Sure.
All right.
You have Doug Martin as somebody you think is going to bust this year.
And that's the cost that you're paying, top 10 running back price, second round draft cost, possibly, you know, maybe third round if you're PPR and wide receivers are going a lot early. It's all about the cost with him because the biggest complaint about Doug Martin before last year was that he was 3 or 4 big games and not much else. And for whatever reason, people don't seem to be paying attention to that was kind of what we saw from Doug Martin again last year. There was 6, so it was a few more, but he had actually 3 huge games, and then he had a couple other big games. And actually, if you factor out the bigger games, the other 9 or 10, he averaged about 6.5 fantasy points per game. So it's not, again, you look at Doug Martin is what I don't like about the Sean Jacksons of the world, is that the end of the year numbers look terrific. But when you talk about it, you're talking about fantasy football, you're talking about relying on somebody every single week for the cost that you're going to pay. The Sean Jackson's value has finally become baked in. Because everybody finally understands that. But if you're paying that price for Doug Martin for a running back to that level that you want to be your RB1, that is only going to give you RB1 numbers, as actually T-Hole said earlier in the show about somebody else, is if you look at the games where he actually finished as an RB1 was much fewer than the games that he didn't even finish as an RB2. So that's the biggest problem. It's not so much that he's going to bust come the end of the year. He'll probably still end up with top 15 numbers if he makes it through 16 games just because of the offense and the usage he gets. But if you're talking about the better talent, if you're talking about the better production per touch on that team, it is Charles Sims, and it's not Doug Martin. It's just I'm not paying the price to get Doug Martin. I don't own him in a single league.
I think Jake's points are very good about the consistency factor. The one counter argument that I would possibly make just to give it a worthwhile, let's give a counterpoint to think about this type of thing, is that you're playing with a rookie quarterback. And so when you're talking about red zone opportunities, you're talking about efficiency inside the 20-yard line, inside the 10-yard line. It probably had room to improve. When you look at the fact that they didn't have the top end receivers playing well or even on the field. So it gives defenses a chance to really pay attention to and just shut down the best weapon on the field. And at that point, the best weapon on the field that defenses knew about was Doug Martin. This year, if everything works the way that we're projecting it to, that may open things up a little bit more where you start to see Doug Martin become a more consistent red zone threat. And if that happens, then you may see that consistency. But I think that Jake makes overall good points.
I got to keep things moving or else I'm going to have you until week one. So let me move on.
I don't know. I just got back in the country, bro. I don't know what is going on. Please tell me who is hurt. What is going on? I don't know what's happening. I'm Twitter beefing with idiot losers on my own website. My own website popping off at me. How dare they? I don't know what's going on. So if you can enlighten me about some injuries, I could chime in.
It's probably on everybody's mind. Let's just get right into the Teddy thing.
Vikings camp blew up because Bridgewater had a knee injury that was non-contact, was on the ground. Knee was deformed. Players were on their knees praying, and apparently it was chaos. See, ambulances came up to pick him up, and that already tells us it's a big injury, something out of the ordinary. It's not your routine ACL. He does not have any nerve or blood vessel injury. He did have a knee dislocation, and it is an ACL tear with associated structural injuries. Now, they didn't tell us what structures they were. It could be bone injuries. It could be a meniscus tear. It could be other ligamentous injuries. But the bottom line is, even if it's two ligaments that are out, they'll get reconstructed sometime within the next week to 10 days. Look for him to be back 2017.
The far end, worst side of the spectrum.
Yeah, so let's take this two parts. The first is, how bad could this have been? If you look at knee dislocations, the blood vessels and the nerves run right behind that knee. So if the knee kind of looks like this, this being the thigh bone and this is your shin bone, and it pops, you can imagine that the vessels that are right behind it can stretch. If you have nerve damage, it can leave you with paralysis in the ankle, loss of motion, loss of strength. That's one category, and that's a big injury, but you at least keep your limb. The bigger injury is if you have the blood vessel getting torn. And if that gets torn and they cannot repair it, that can lead to blood vessel, that can lead to an amputation, a below-the-knee amputation. And there are reports of football players in high school and collegiate level having dislocated knees and going on to an amputated leg. So that was the real concern. And I think that's probably what Vikings camp was most worried about on the field. And then obviously they were being very quiet about it while he was getting worked up.
So the initial worst fear, we can breathe a sigh of relief as far as his career and long term.
That's correct.
Sticking with the quarterback, Tony Romo.
Yeah, so, Tony Romo has shown himself to be fragile. But if you look at your spine, there's these little building blocks of bone called vertebral bodies. He has a compression fracture. Now, that usually needs 6 weeks at best, but really 10 to 12 weeks to heal. The Cowboys have to be very careful with him. At 36 years old, he is older. He's more fragile. He's shown that to be the case. I don't think he's going to be back on the field in 6 weeks. I just think it's too soon. It's too optimistic. I think we're looking at 10 to 11, maybe 12 weeks, and maybe he's gone the entire season. You got to be careful, because you get him on the field too soon and he takes a hit on that back, that bone's going to really crush. And if that really crushes and pushes on his nerves, he's done for his career. It could even cause permanent nerve damage to him. So it's not as a small injury as kind of the media's playing off and Garrett's playing off.
One more player while we have you here.
Kenneth Dixon has a medial collateral ligament tear. If you look at the knee, there's four ligaments that support the knee. We always hear about the ACL, but you have the PCL as well, and then the medial collateral ligament, which is on the inner part of the knee. The grade that we're hearing is about a grade 2 injury, so it's not fully torn. It's stretched out. Looks like 2 to 4 weeks is the timeline for him to be out. When he gets back on the playing field, he'll be fine. This is not going to be something that haunts him through the season.
Doc, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And let me go back to you, Matt. I'm going to move on to your love this year, which is Marvin Jones.
When you're talking about Marvin Jones, the thing about Marvin Jones is that most people look at results and not process. And certainly results, you can reverse engineer results to a certain degree and be able to generate some really worthwhile points that come out of that. But sometimes you miss out on good process information, such as that Marvin Jones has always been an excellent route runner. He's always run the full route tree. He's always been good at timing routes. He was a player that I compared to Donald Driver coming out of school. This was a guy that dominated Senior Bowl practices and got deep on a really good group of cornerbacks in practice early right away. And a lot of scouts were surprised by that because they only watched his senior year of tape and his junior year of tape. When he was a sophomore and Keenan Allen wasn't there, he was their deep threat, and he was quite good at it. But they used him in a different role because he was versatile. And when he ended, you know, he's playing opposite A.J. Green with Andy Dalton. I mean, at that point, A.J. Green is the star of the show. He's one of the best, you know, 4 to 5 receivers in football. And also he got hurt. So when people look at that, they don't see the production there. They may not understand how good of a route runner he has been. So when you go to a team like the Lions, where you're paired with a quarterback who operated a pro-style offense in high school and in college, that operates a lot on good timing routes, and it's not just a play-action run, throw into an open zone offense that is what we see now with Matt Ryan in Atlanta, you're actually going to see a guy drop back 3-5, sometimes 7, but probably 3-5 steps and hit those timing routes into tight coverage. And when you do that and you have a good route runner, it's unstoppable. It is, you know, Roddy White is unstoppable when he was healthy, and you could put him in tight coverage and Matt Ryan was hitting him all day long. He was the straw that stirred the drink with that offense back in the day, even with Julio Jones providing those big numbers, because on 3rd and 13, he could say, I'm zipping the deep out or the deep coming back, and you can put Darrell Revis on him, and he's still probably going to catch 2 out of 3 of those balls because of the fact he's more money with that timing. Stafford and Jones are showing that timing. And so while Tate is going to be a nice option because he can go up and win the ball, he can make plays after the catch, he's a good open runner in the zone. Jones offers all those things, maybe not quite as good as Tate in some of those areas, but he's better with those timing routes. And now you have really 3 to 4 receivers in Detroit who can all catch the ball pretty reliably, other than Tate's issues this summer, which are kind of unusual, but they can catch it reliably. And that actually may be a plus over Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson is better than all 3 of those guys, but he can't be in 3 places at the field at the same time or 5 places on the field at the same time. So we can sit there and go, you're crazy for saying that they're going to be a better passing offense than they did. But when they had Calvin Johnson and a bunch of guys who dropped balls that Matt Stafford put right on their hands on 3rd down, your offense is going to suck. But when you take away Calvin Johnson, and now it's like, okay, I just have to do what I'm supposed to do, and I don't have to go against the tendencies that every quarterback coach has taught me throughout my life, which is throw to the guy who's covered and let him go up and try and make the play. Suddenly, you're now going with more intuitive tendencies, and it makes football easier. And I think that Jones has top 15 upside. He's kind of, to me, a plus Jeremy Maclin. That's what I see him at. And if you can get him in the 8th, 9th round, I think if, you know, a lot of people like the going with the, you know, wide receivers early, non-running backs early, and go running backs in the middle of the draft. And certainly there's some merits to that. But at the same time, you know, everyone seems to be interested in doing that this year, and it's been building over the past several years. I see value now to be able to get some running backs early and to go with guys like Larry Fitzgerald, Marvin Jones, you know, in those middle rounds. And Marvin Jones, to me, is finally going to get that opportunity to be the man, and he has the support system around him in terms of other receivers that will take attention away from him, right, or attention away from defenses. And he has the quarterback who actually can make all the throws you need him to make, and they have the timing down. And to me, put all that together, and I like that upside. And even if he doesn't give you top 15 upside at the rate you're going to get him, he's probably still going to come in as a wide receiver two, wide receiver three.
All else being equal, I'm just kind of curious, would you take Tate or Jones? Because you start talking about his ADP actually finally caught up. They're one spot behind each other now. It's Tate and then Jones.
Yeah. I'd still take Jones because I'm more of a look. He can run after the catch. He can get deep. He can still make those plays in tight physical coverage in the red zone and win those jump balls. And he's a better route runner. So when I put that together, it may not be from a statistical standpoint of trends, but from just what I see on the field, I'd prefer Marvin Jones. And I'm probably a little biased even to that degree because Marvin Jones has always been a favorite of mine. So I'll make that clear. So if you're worried that I'm, about the bias factor, I'll admit it, because I am.
The Lord has caught a lot of balls in his life, footballs included. And you got to see Marvin Jones for up close and personal in Pac-10. County, country, land. Are you a fan of Marvin Jones as well? Same question to you. Are you taking Dick Golden Tate or Marvin Jones?
Yeah, Matt is going so deep here. I mean, high school, college. Where are you finding these guys? I'm just going to sit here and I'm just taking notes for my draft going forward. All I'm going to do is just do what this guy says. They're going so deep right now that I don't have anything to add. I'm going to keep it real simple for you. I've been a huge Marvin Jones fan since day one. 2 years ago, he obviously kind of exploded in kind of the shorter period. Last year, he finally stayed healthy, which seemed like almost the whole year, and the numbers weren't quite maybe what people were hoping for. But, yeah, they're in Detroit where it's just him and Tate. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they both had 1,000-yard seasons. I do really like him going deep. He's a little faster, I believe, than Tate. And, I like them both. If I had to choose between one, I mean, we've been talking about Jones a lot on this show. And after that in-depth analysis, I think I am fully sold on Marvin Jones. Thank you.
You gave me three loves, so I'll just read them off real quick. Jameis Winston, we talked about. C.J. Anderson and Michael Thomas.
And Rishard Matthews.
No, you have Rishard Matthews as one of your sleepers. Along with Michael Thomas. So I just want everybody to know who some of the guys on your list are, but we're going to go a little bit more in depth with Michael Thomas. You got Kobe Fleener, who people want to anoint as tight end number one now. I'm exaggerating, of course, but I think so are people just assuming he'll be in the top five. You got Willie Snead, who Matt Harmon has made a legend, and everybody is on the Willie Snead train, and I can't fault it because I, too, believe in that as well. So you got them two. And then Michael Thomas kind of enters the picture in New Orleans, and they're going to be throwing a hell of a lot. But how are you putting so much faith into a rookie wide receiver?
Well, let me throw out one little thing real quick about Rishard Matthews, because I know we're not going to get to him. I just want to throw out the fact that he was top 10 in points per target in standard and PPR, and was in top 10 in catch percentage. So that's why I'm such a big fan of what he can do in Tennessee. So to Michael Thomas, the thing that I like about him, and this is what I said when I was writing about him as a rookie before he was even drafted. I said, the reason he's going to succeed in the NFL is not because of the athletic ability. It's because of his route running ability. It's because he has pristine route running. He knows how to get away from defenders. He knows how to set them up. He knows how to attack the ball. And what you're going to do is you're going to come into the Saints offense, which that's one of the best possible landing spots you could have. And he's going to fill Marcus Colston's role. And a lot of the talk is similar to what we see with Jordan Matthews possibly playing out of slot, for what a lot of people might not understand. I'm not trying to diminish anybody who's listening to us and calling them laymans or anything like that. But just because somebody plays in a slot doesn't necessarily make him a slot receiver, because Marcus Colston played at a slot a lot too. He's a slot flanker. And what it is you can do a lot of work out of there. Just because he lines up there doesn't mean he's running your typical slot routes of your smaller slot guys. And the difference is, if you look at Ben Watson last year, they didn't really have Marcus Colston. We know what he did last year. He's at the end of his career. Marcus Colston was a shell of his former self. And I love the guy, but he just wasn't good at anything. And what Ben Watson was able to do was succeed over the middle of the field and in the end zone. And that's where Michael Thomas is going to do his damage. And that's why I haven't been as high on Kobe Fleener as most people, because I think he already hurt Kobe Fleener by being there, by being somebody who can be one of the best middle of the field red zone options for Drew Brees. And as you mentioned, and this is what I love to reference, of the last 6 years, Drew Brees has thrown the ball at least 627 times, with that being the low last year when he missed the game. So I think you're looking at Michael Thomas, I said, could easily catch 7 to 8 touchdowns. The yardage might not be great, but the touchdowns will be there. And that's why, again, I go back to, this is why you also need to rein back a little bit on Kobe Fleener, which is finally starting to happen because all the news is starting to come out about him being slow to adjust to the offense. And he has more flaws than people seem to realize before this year, which I don't understand how they just ignored him the entire time when he was with the Colts.
Well, you know, and here's a point just on Fleener real quick. He was Andrew Luck's roommate and best friend at Stanford, right? And wound up in the same pro offense with him. And no matter how much we tried to project Kobe Fleener as being a top five, top four, top three tight end, it just never happened. He put up respectable numbers, but he's never made that leap. And now all of a sudden you're basically saying Andrew Luck isn't a good quarterback if you think that all of a sudden Drew Brees is going to make him something he wasn't. So let me – Lord, do you want to take over before I give this one to Matt on Michael Thomas?
Who
happened to be my favorite receiver of this class. I'll just throw that out.
Are you asking Fleener or Thomas?
Thomas, of course. I don't like Fleener at all. But go ahead with Thomas.
Yeah. Fleener, everything I'm reading on Fleener is all bad. It's not looking good there for him. But, yeah, Thomas, yeah, originally back in the NFL draft stuff, all like way back, like a year ago, everybody had him as kind of like the number one receiver in this draft for like quite a while, I felt like, or at least up there as a first round draft prospect ahead of most of these guys that ended up going ahead of him. And then people kind of just slowly kind of faded towards when the actual draft kind of hit. Why? I'm not really sure. Some of these other guys kind of had stronger finishes in college or whatever, but I think Thomas has always kind of been a pretty nice prospect, and yeah, he's going to be great there with the Saints. It seems like, you know, a lot of people thought he would beat out, maybe even surpass Snead in targets, and I'm not sure. Maybe he does, but yeah, he'll be a real nice fit there. And then yeah, Fleener is not going to really affect that at all. And yeah, I like him to a degree. I'd be curious if he gets that much work. I'll be a little bit surprised, but pleasantly surprised, because I'm going to be drafting him now in every league.
Also, I forgot to mention Brandon Cooks as being, you know, the primary focus of that passing attack, and I think he's going to be in line for great things this year.
I think he's the top fantasy wide receiver as a rookie among the rookies. He's the best rookie wide receiver for this year. That's my bet on that, over Shepard, over anybody else that you throw into the mix. And the reason is that Sean Payton is probably the most impressive offensive coach in football right now. And you also have one of the best quarterbacks in football throwing to him. And when you take a look at what Thomas is able to do as a route runner, I think Jake did a great job of explaining how he's, you know, more than just a slot receiver. I often said that he was kind of what, imagine Michael Crabtree in his prime, and not with the 49ers, but playing with Drew Brees. And I think that that's what you kind of have with a guy like Michael Thomas, who can get deep as needed. He's not going to beat every primary corner just right off the line of scrimmage with the speed that he has. But because he's a technically sound route runner, because he can win the ball in tight coverage, and he's also someone that can make plays after the catch, he's a versatile guy. And what I liked about him the most, and this is just kind of feeds into what you saw all summer long, is that Cardale Jones talked about him at the draft and said that after the draft, he told a story about how when he got the starting gig at Ohio State, the first person to come work with him was Michael Thomas. And he said that Michael Thomas pretty much attached to Cardale's hip and said, you know, we're going to work together so that we're on the same page with everything, because I want to make sure that you and I, you know, are totally in sync. And just pretty much, you know, was there as almost a taskmaster in a sense. And he said, right at the draft, he said about Michael Thomas, he goes, Drew Brees should expect a call from Michael Thomas as soon as he's drafted, asking about when they're going to meet, when they're going to work together, how often they're going to do that, and make sure. And he's going to stick to Drew Brees until Brees is sick of him. And that's pretty much what happened. I mean, Brees said that very early on that he trusted Michael Thomas, and you can see that with really this with the offense. And when we're going to see that more as this plays out in the season with, you know, adjustments in coverage, pre-snap, post-snap type of reads. And I'm very confident that Michael Thomas is going to be on point there. And when you have a guy like Sean Payton say this, because, again, he's like, I don't follow fantasy football, which right there, that statement yourself tells you he doesn't know a thing about it if he's talking about following it. But I don't follow fantasy football. But if I were in a league, I would have Michael Thomas on my team. I think that just tells you probably not so much about his usage, but about how mature the guy is. And that maturity will lead to usage and to big plays. And I think that's probably more where he's looking at there. I you know, as much as I like Sterling Shepard, as much as I like Laquon Treadwell as a long-term prospect, as much as I like Josh Doctson and Leonte Carew as long-term guys, the best combination of route runner, quarterback, big play offense, good coaching, decent offensive line to protect a quarterback, it's all there in New Orleans. So, you know, if you like King Cake, you're going to enjoy you know, he's going to be that little baby in the King Cake.
But what I also want to know, Matt, is what were Thomas's numbers his sophomore year in high school?
I can't tell you that, and I don't know where he shot to get his underwear either, thank God.
He is Keyshawn Johnson's nephew, and I'm glad you mentioned the fantasy thing, because to me, that just indicates that the head coach has plans to involve him in the offense. Matt, let me ask you to plug anything you want to plug. Let people know how and where they can find you.
You can find me at footballguys.com. I'm a staff writer there, and I do a lot of the upside stuff that you see in their draft dominator work. I write two columns there called The Gut Check, and I also write one called The Top 10. That'll be an in-season look at some of the 10 more important points, at least from my twisted mind, about what goes on in the season. I also have a blog called MattWaldmanRSP.com. You heard about the rookie scouting portfolio. And as you can see, that's my insanity. It's about a 250-page draft guide that does rankings and does a lot of different work. But then I show all my transparent way, I show all my work. So that amounts to over 1,000 pages of work that you can see. But most people, I encourage them, please don't read that. You'll lose your mind. just read the 250 pages that are in there. And then it comes with an addendum in May that's updated after the draft. And then the Browns. I'm just interested. This is like the football version of the movie Major League. Isaiah Crowell has to redeem himself a little bit, you know, for what he did at Georgia. He's still on the path towards redemption. You got Griffin, you know, dealing with the dysfunction in Washington, and hopefully he's matured from that, even though we know Mike Shanahan hasn't matured from that. And then you also have guys like Terrell Pryor, who star player who wants to be the best at what he is now rather than being a mediocre quarterback or a bad quarterback in the NFL. So you have a lot of guys who have a lot to prove. And I think Hugh Jackson is just the right guy for this particular team, who's going to take a little bit more of a patient approach, who understands the talents that they have. And he's not an ego coach who's like, this is my system and this is how we're going to do it. And I don't care if you're fit for it or not. He's more of a, this is how I like to do things. I'm going to find a way for you to do what you do best. And this is going to be a little bit more of a 1 to 2 year thing. And of course we got Josh Gordon, who I think has seen his career near death experience. And I feel like that, you know, he knows this is it for him. And he's, to me, Julio Jones with better route skills, or big Mike Williams from USC with a rocket pack strapped to his ass. So I feel pretty good about what I'm going to watch, even if I don't feel good about the results. I think it's going to be a step in the right direction.
I'm going to be up all night now reading that 1,000-page thing. This is the addendum.
All right. And Jake, you have some exciting news to share with people, I believe. But where can people find you, and what would you like to plug, and what's your take, and why are you so interested in the Colts offense or Colts in general?
I'll answer that one first. I'm just super intrigued by what's going to happen with the Colts this year, just because I think this is either going to be terrific for everybody in fantasy, or it's going to be the train wreck city. And that's why I'm so fascinated, because even before they lost Muhort, it was, what's going on with Andrew Luck? He doesn't look good in the preseason. The offensive line is still garbage before they lost Muhort. And it's even worse now, and I know he's going to be coming back. But is Frank Gore going to make it through 16 games again? They have nobody behind Frank. Look, even Thiel knows. Robert Turbin, I mean, come on now. That's the backup plan behind him. So you got that going on. T.Y. Hilton I love, but Dante Moncrief and Philip Dorsett seem to be going for such a high price at this point. Like, that's what I said. This is going to be the best possible result for everybody that's on board with the Colts, or it's just going to be a train wreck for everybody that owns all of them. So I'm really fascinated to see what happens this year. That's really all it is. It's just not like there's not some deep insight that I'm looking for here. It's going to be a fun team to watch either way. As for me, yeah, because I have to be up in about 7 hours for my show. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network officially has started. It kicked off today. It kicked off before that, but it was that soft launch we weren't telling everybody about. So you can follow me at All In Kid. You can follow the Fantasy Sports Radio Network at FNTSY Radio. And you can listen to me every single morning, 7 to 10 a.m. with Greg Sussman, talking fantasy, talking other sports, anything. We were talking about the Olympics, talking about wrestling, all types of stuff. Plus, as with Matt, I do write for a site, so you'll find me writing multiple articles over at rotoexperts.com. I cover the Saints for NewOrleansSaints.com. I'm on the Fantasy Sports Network on TV for that. So I do not get – basically, the football season started. I don't get more than 4 hours of sleep per night from now until January. That's really what it is.
I am tremendously grateful to both of you for not just coming on, but staying up and giving me this. I'm going to try to whittle this down as best I can. Without cutting out too much, I'm gonna cut out all the Tejo's parts.
No, you do it like Matt does. You give him the real version and then the addendum at the end.
That's one way to go. We could do that. I like that idea. Hey, don't forget to check out our partners, fantasyassembly.com, as well as Friends with Fantasy Benefits. You can check out both of those sites for some more great fantasy football articles, podcasts, and other great resources to help you as an owner this season. It was a lot of fun getting to talk with Matt Waldman, Jake Seeley, as always, Lord Bedick. Good luck to all you guys in your fantasy drafts, those that have been going on. I can't remind you enough, check out revolabels.com. They will definitely enhance your draft experience. You can get great, beautiful, customized draft kits for your home leagues, for your live draft parties. It is an experience you do not want to forsake. And you can get a great product at a very affordable price. So go check out revolabels.com and make sure to use Nickel Press TV, no spaces, at checkout so you can save 10% on your order. All right, so thanks for tuning in again. And make sure to check back next week when we'll be joined by Andrew Leitner of DLF, as well as Jen Ryan of Gridiron Experts. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Please leave your likes, comments, subscribe to the channel, and we'll see you next week.
Football season has returned, and so has the Fantasy Black Book 2016 edition. Number one in fantasy sports for the 8th straight time, on Amazon, Kindle, and on iTunes. The Fantasy Black Book has all of the information you need this season to separate yourself from the herd. The Fantasy Black Book is just $4.99, that's half as much as your precious magazines. Football is coming. The Black Book is ready.